Joy One, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, Katie Weaver and Mario Ritter Jr. tell us about a study that helps explain why whales get so big. John Russell presents this week's Everyday Grammar Report. We close the show with the next part of our U.S. history series. But first, here are Katie and Mario.
Scientists have wondered long on the mystery of how whales got so big. A new study suggests some answers. Whales are ocean animals. The fin, bowhead, gray, humpback, and sperm whales are the largest animals living today. In fact, the blue whale is the largest animal known to have ever existed, bigger than any dinosaur. The recent study by researchers in Brazil found that four genes appear to play a big part in whales' huge size, a condition known as gigantism. The researchers said the four genes appear to have produced great size while easing the problems linked with it, such as cancer risk and lower reproductive ability. Whales are part of the ocean animal family called cetaceans, which includes dolphins and porpoises. Scientists think the family developed 50 million years ago from animals like wolves, but is also related to today's cows, pigs, sheep, and similar animals.
Mariana Neri, a genetics expert with the University of Campinas, or Unicamp, in Brazil, was a lead writer of the report. It appeared in the publication Scientific Reports. Neri said her team has done the first study of gigantism in whales at the molecular level. She said body size is a complex result of many genes, pathways, and physical and ecological processes. The study examined seven kinds of whales that grow longer than 10 meters. Six of them are toothless animals. Instead, they have structures called baleen in their mouths that catch very small animals. The seventh species studied was the sperm whale, which has large teeth to feed on giant squid and ocean animals. The whales can reach huge sizes. Humpback and right whales can reach 15 meters in length. The sperm and bowhead whales, 18 meters. The fin whale can reach 24 meters. And the biggest, the blue whale, has been measured at 30 meters. The researchers studied several genes linked to increased body size in other animals. They found four genes that appeared to be important in the development of whales.
One of the genes is GHSR. It is involved in releasing growth hormone from the pituitary gland, a part of the body that releases important chemicals. Growth hormone can cause hunger, and it can control metabolism and the growth of fat. The gene also controls cell division. A second gene is called IGF-BP7. This gene is involved in cell growth and division. There is evidence that this gene acts to suppress cancer in many parts of the body, including the prostate, breasts, lungs, colon, and rectum. NCAPG is a gene associated with growth in humans, horses, cattle, pigs, and chickens. It can cause size and weight gain and affects the lives of cells. The gene PLAG1 is associated with body growth in cows, pigs, and sheep. It is involved in the growth of embryos and cell survival. The study also suggests that the genes such as GHSR and IGF-BP7, which are linked to huge size, might also control cell development and suppress cancer. Huge size in nature is tied to shorter lifespans. But huge whales live long lives. The humpback whale can reach 50 years of age. The blue whale can reach 90. And, the study noted, the bowhead whale is the longest-lived mammal known, reaching 200 years of age.
Felipe André Silva was lead writer of the study. He worked on the research while earning his master's degree in genetics and molecular biology. He said gigantism in whales appeared relatively recently, around 5 million years ago. Before that, there were animals with large sizes, but these were exceptions, and most cetaceans did not exceed 10 meters in length, he said. Silva told Reuters news agency, gigantism may bring some advantages, such as a lower chance of being preyed upon and a greater chance of obtaining food. Neri said, a lot can be learned about the development or evolution of whales over long periods of time. She said, these animals can teach us a lot about the evolutionary process itself. And whales remain popular and interesting to many people and gain a lot of attention. Neri added, the evolution of cetaceans is a fantastic story. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
Next, John Russell presents part two of his Everyday Grammar lesson, Talking About Art. Enjoy!
After releasing our recent report, Talking About Art, we received many wonderful messages from VOA Learning English fans around the world. In today's report, we will share some of those messages. We'll provide feedback and suggestions as well. So, let's hear what you had to say about art and explore some interesting grammar points, too. Let's start with part of a message from Dimitri.
My favorite piece of art is Over the Town by Marc Chagall. There are three most important things for the artist on it. He, his wife, and their hometown, Vitebsk. Actually, Vitebsk is one of the most wonderful towns in my country, Belarus. While looking at the art, I clearly understand the feelings of the great artist and fly home in my imagination. This is why I love Over the Town.
Dmitri provides a good description of the painting Over the Town. We have some suggestions to make it even better. We will start with the second sentence. You could remove the word there as the subject and use a specific noun in its place, for example, the artwork. You could also replace the noun thing with a more specific noun, like element. Let's check out the new sentence.
The artwork has three important elements: the artist, his wife, and their hometown, Vitebsk.
Or you could use a different structure, as in:
the three most important elements of the artwork are the artist, his wife, and their hometown, Vitebsk.
Dmitri did an excellent job of organizing sentences. The second sentence ends with the noun Vitebsk, and then the following sentence gives more details about Vitebsk and Dmitri's connection to it. Dmitri mentioned that he is from Vitebsk and misses his hometown greatly. He says he cannot visit it. We hope that you can do so soon, Dmitri. Now here is part of a message from Mariko.
I'm Mariko. I enjoy listening to Everyday Grammar often. Talking about my favorite art, I'm interested in Claude Monet's Poplars in the Sun. Its color is brightful but natural because it's illuminated by sunlight. I love the green, yellow color of poplars and gentle blue in the sky.
We think Mariko's description of the artwork is excellent. That said, we have a few ideas on ways to make the piece even better. The first relates to transitions. Mariko wrote some words of greeting and then changed the subject to the topic of art.
Talking about my favorite art, I'm interested in Claude Monet's Poplars in the Sun.
We suggest changing the introduction, talking about my favorite art. Introductory phrases, especially those that begin with ing words, can be tricky. It is sometimes a good idea to avoid them. In this case, a sentence fragment, a sentence without a complete subject and predicate, might work as a transition. For example, you might write some greetings and then change subjects by writing
a word about my favorite piece of art.
You could go on to add more details. For example,
a word about my favorite piece of art. I love Claude Monet's Poplars in the Sun.
Or
a word about my favorite piece of art. It is Monet's Poplars in the Sun.
We also suggest removing brightful and using the word bright instead. You might use the noun painting in place of its, as in
the painting is bright but natural because it is illuminated by sunlight.
Or you might say
the painting is bright but natural. It is illuminated by sunlight.
In the final sentence, you might add some determiners such as the in a couple places, as in
I love the green and yellow color of the poplars and the gentle blue in the sky.
There are, of course, different ways to structure such a description. We have only offered a few suggestions. We took some valuable learning materials from today's report. We learned that sometimes including one special noun can help you more clearly express yourself. We also learned about introductory phrases and how to be careful about using determiners such as the. Many thanks again for all of your messages. We hope that you enjoyed writing about art as much as we enjoyed reading your notes. Keep up the good work. I'm John Russell.
just heard John Russell present this week's Everyday Grammar Report. John is here now to talk more about the story. Welcome back, John.
Thanks, Ashley.
In this week's report, you talk about nouns that a person might use to talk about a painting. Can you talk about this subject a little more?
Sure. You might be tempted to use the noun thing when you talk about a painting. You could say, I like three things about the painting: the trees, the grass, and the clouds in the distance. Thing is a very general noun, and it is used a lot in everyday speech. But when we talk about art, we often use other nouns such as element. The elements of art are colors, lines, shapes, forms, and so on. So, when you use the word element to talk about a painting, the listener will know that you are knowledgeable about art, or at least interested in the subject.
Interesting. Well, thanks for answering that question, John, and thanks again for joining me.
You're welcome. See you next time.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. President Ulysses Grant served two terms in office. His administration was marked by corruption. The president himself was not linked directly to any of the incidents, but he was friends with dishonest members of the cabinet and Congress. Jack Weitzel and Tony Riggs tell how Grant's problems affected the Republican Party in the presidential election of 1876.
The American people were very disappointed with President Grant. He was the military hero of the Civil War. He had led the Union Army of the North to victory over the Confederate Army of the South. His popularity dropped, however, during his presidency. Grant was not an effective political leader, nor was he able to control the men around him. The American people also were worried about the nation's economic situation. A serious depression had begun during Grant's second term. Many people were out of work. They blamed the ruling Republican Party.
The state and congressional elections of 1874 were an important turning point. Republicans were shocked by the results. For the first time in 18 years, the Democratic Party won control of the House of Representatives. They won 169 seats. The Republicans won 109. Democrats also won control of 23 of the 35 state governments. These included several northern states where people were tired of Republican rule.
Important changes also were made in the South. Democrats won control of southern state governments from radical Republicans. One of these states was Mississippi. White Democrats there began organizing groups called White Leagues. These groups wanted to prevent blacks from voting for radical Republicans. They started riots in which many blacks were killed. They also used economic power
against blacks. These efforts succeeded. Most blacks were too afraid to vote. The Democrats took control of both the Mississippi legislature and the governor's office. Similar actions with similar results took place in other southern states.
As Grant's second term came to an end, he began to talk about the possibility of another 4 years in the White House. Republican politicians were firmly opposed. They blamed Grant for the party's defeats in state and congressional elections. Grant had to give up any hope of a third term. Congressman James Blaine seemed to have the best chance of winning the Republican presidential nomination in 1876. Blaine had been Speaker of the House of Representatives when the Republicans controlled Congress. He was powerful, and he had many supporters. Some Republican leaders, however, questioned his honesty. Blaine fought this criticism with an emotional speech in Congress.
When the Republican Party convention opened in Cincinnati, Ohio, Blaine was the leading candidate for the presidential nomination. He expected to win the first day. There was a wild demonstration of support when his name was put before the convention. But before the voting could begin, the lights went out. Some delegates believed Blaine's opponents were responsible. These opponents worked all night to get other delegates to change their support from Blaine to another candidate. When the delegates voted the next morning, Blaine did not have enough votes to win the nomination.
However, after six ballots, Blaine appeared ready to win. To stop him, his opponents needed to unite behind another candidate. One of these candidates was Rutherford Hayes, the governor of Ohio. Hayes had fewer enemies than the other candidates, so he became the compromise candidate for delegates hoping to stop Blaine. On the seventh ballot of the convention, Rutherford Hayes captured the Republican nomination.
The Democratic Party met in St. Louis, Missouri. Delegates nominated Samuel Tilden, the governor of New York. Tilden had led the fight to end dishonesty in government in New York State. He had ousted a group called the Tweed Ring, which controlled New York City politics for years. Democrats said he was the man to end dishonesty in government in Washington. Republicans campaigned by denouncing the Democratic Party. They called it the party of Southern rebellion and treason. Instead, they said, vote for the Republican Party, the party that had saved the Union. Democrats campaigned by attacking Republican dishonesty. They blamed Republicans for the nation's economic problems, and they promised better times for everyone if their candidate was elected.
The presidential election of 1876 was very close. By midnight of Election Day, The results seemed to show that Democrat Samuel Tilden was the winner. Republican Rutherford Hayes went to bed believing he had lost. However, the Republicans quickly saw that the electoral votes of three southern states could decide the winner. In the American presidential system, whoever wins the most popular votes in a state usually gets all the electoral votes of that state. In 1876, the electoral votes of three states, Florida, Louisiana, and South Carolina, were enough to give the White House to one candidate or the other.
Each party claimed victory in these three states. Each accused the other of stealing votes and counting ballots unfairly. Finally, the two parties agreed to form an electoral committee to decide who had won the disputed votes. The committee was supposed to include seven Republicans, seven Democrats, and one independent. But before it could meet, the independent member resigned. A Republican took his place. The Republicans had a majority.
The committee first debated the disputed votes of Florida. After much discussion, the eight Republicans on the committee voted to accept the votes of Florida's Republican electors. They rejected a proposal to investigate the way the votes were counted in the state. They said there was not enough time for a full investigation. The same thing happened with the disputed votes of Louisiana and South Carolina. The Republicans on the committee voted to count the Republican electors. The Democrats voted to count the Democratic electors. In each case, the Republicans won by a vote of 8-7.
As a result, Rutherford Hayes gained the electoral votes of all three states. This gave him enough to win the election. Democrats were furious. Democrats in many states began organizing party militia groups. They said they would fight, if necessary, to prevent the Republicans from stealing the presidency. The situation seemed very tense and dangerous. Many feared the start of another civil war. Negotiations finally provided a peaceful solution.
Representatives of the two parties met secretly to work out a compromise. The Democrats agreed to permit Republican Rutherford Hayes to be sworn in as president. In return, Hayes agreed to end federal support of radical Republican governments in the South. He promised to name Southerners to his cabinet and other important jobs. And he said he would provide more federal aid for schools and railroads in the South. As part of the agreement, Hayes promised not to act aggressively to support the civil rights of black Southerners.
Hayes' opponent, Democrat Samuel Tilden, did not oppose the agreement. Tilden was an old man. His health was poor. He agreed that 4 years of Rutherford Hayes would be better than 4 years of civil war. So it was that Rutherford Hayes became the 19th president of the United States.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.